Die radiostasie huisves uiteenlopende menings in ons programme, want daar is 'n wye spektrum mense wat deelneem. Let echter op die volgende. Die individuele menings wat oor die lig of deur opnames uitgespreek word, is nie noodwendig die van die radiostasie, werknemers of sy bestuur nie. Kontak ons gerus met enige navraag of kommentaar na gelang van die onderwerp.
Jou keuse op 105.
This morning we're chatting to Graham Joffe. He is described as a lone crusader and his book is called Sport, Greed and Betrayal, Wanted for Crimes Against Journalism. And this book is described as explosive and heart-hitting. And we wanted to chat to Graham and find out why he needed to flee from South Africa in 2015 and why his book is upsetting so many people. Good day, Graham. Thanks for joining us.
So, Niels, what a pleasure, and good morning to your listeners as well.
Such a great honor to speak to you this morning, Graham. Let's start with first things first. You say you literally had to flee the country, South Africa. You had to leave because your life was in danger. Is this, in fact, is it a little bit blown up, or did you receive actual death threats?
Niels, you know, I received a lot of different things happen to me. You know, when I started the sports investigative journalism 7 years ago, and literally I was a lone crusader, there's really no culture of investigative sports journalism in South Africa, or very little. So I made a lot of enemies. I started getting followed. I started getting funny calls. I started getting some threats. I got people telling me to stop doing what I was doing. I really, you know, as I said, making a lot of enemies, people linked to government, sporting federations. I lost a lot of friends as well that I was exposing at the same time as well. So it was across the spectrum. And then four and a half years ago, I had some people in Equestrian that were helping me, and they had a private investigator on their books. And the private investigator found that my phone had been diverted 3 times. So my phone was being illegally tapped. My emails were being hacked. The company of the Olympic Committee of South Africa, SASCOC, created a defamatory anonymous website on a server in Panama to defame and discredit me. So I had all these forces against me. And the private investigator, unfortunately, wasn't on my book. So to this day, when I finally got the call from the friend that, well, the acquaintance, let's say the acquaintance from Equestrian, who had hired the private investigator, basically he said, they're coming to get you this weekend. I'd moved to Grahamstown. They come to get you. You better get out of your apartment, get to a place of safety. And I went underground. I flew back to Johannesburg, went underground for 4 days. And I was told by the private investigator and this acquaintance, things are getting really hot for you, and it's probably a good idea for you to get out of the country. To this day, I still don't know exactly where the threats were coming from. I believe that I may have been double-crossed by the private investigator and this acquaintance, who became friendly with some of the enemies after I'd left the country. But I wasn't going to sit around waiting to see what was going to happen to me. You know, the dangerous people, people with too much to lose in South African sport that haven't been exposed before. And I was naming and shaming, and I wasn't scared. It doesn't matter who it was. They needed to be exposed for the betterment of South African sport.
That's quite a journey, and I'm sure that was not what you had in mind when you went to study journalism at Rhodes University. How did you become a sports journalist, and furthermore, how did you get into investigative sport journalism?
So, as you know, I have absolutely no regrets. If I had the opportunity to do exactly what I did in the past, I would do it all over again. As a journalist, you've got to have your ethics and integrity.
Correct.
And there was no way that I could sit on the information as an investigative sports journalist. But I was very fortunate. I went to Rhodes University, had 3 of the best years of my life, graduated from Rhodes at the end of 1991, a Bachelor of Arts, majoring in journalism and German. And then I went over to the United States in the beginning of 1992. My sisters were in Chicago. And while I was there, I thought, let me just see if I can't possibly get into some journalism, whether it be radio, TV, or print, over in the United States. And I was in the right place at the right time. I got a job with CNN International. I became a sports anchor for 7 years with CNN in Atlanta. And it was just, it set me up for life. I mean, I learned so much.
Yeah.
Graduating from Rhodes University, suddenly I was an anchor on CNN International. I mean, the transition was pretty crazy for me. And I drowned for a couple of years, but I learned to trade. And it really did get an incredible experience. But I always wanted to come back to South Africa. My heart, you know, when you've got Africa in your blood, it's very difficult to get it out. And I couldn't wait to come back. And I came back after 7 years in 2000. And I continued. I did some work for Supersport. Then I became, you know, I was the sports guy on 94.7 in Johannesburg for 7 years.
That's correct,
and
yes.
Doing my own things. And after 2010 is when I decided to go out on my own. And I started doing my own things. I also developed the social responsibility project called Township TV, which is the closest thing to my heart, putting up those big screen TVs in the townships and giving people free entertainment 365 days of the year. And the investigative journalism was all by default. And it happened about 7 years ago when there was a big controversy between the Lions and the EP Kings, and there was just a whole lot going on. And I started to dig. And from there, it just snowballed because finally people said, wow, here's a guy that actually wants to stand up for the athletes, for the coaches. So suddenly I had all athletes, coaches, and administrators, anyone who had a gripe or anyone who was being harmed or anyone who felt like they'd be unfairly treated, Graeme Joffe was the guy that they went to. And what's crazy is that even 4 years after I've left South Africa, more than 4 years, every day I still get an email or some kind of message from people saying, Graham, please, can you help us?
Yes.
So it makes me very sad because the system, sporting system in South Africa, is so corrupt from top to bottom.
Is that how you decided to go to America? Because you have family there and your previous connections with CNN?
Correct. You know, I needed to go to a place where I had kind of a safe haven and where I could, you know, just come back and feel like I was still comfortable. And it was, I can assure you, no one wants to go through what I went through for those first 2 years back in the United States. I left with a suitcase and a laptop.
Yeah.
I was displaced. I had a heavy heart. I wanted to come back. I thought I had unfinished business. But you know what? In the end, they've done me a big favor because at least now I've got my life back, my life on track. Investigative journalism becomes a total addiction, and I loved it, but it turned my life upside down. But as I said, absolutely no regrets.
So you decided that it's not safe to stay in South Africa and you needed to leave. Take us on that little journey, and then and the second part of the question is, are you feeling safe at the moment?
Yes, Neil, so I'll answer the second part. Yes, I do. I mean, look, I don't put anything past, you know, I've upset a lot of people with the book again.
Yeah.
I've exposed a lot more people than I did right in the beginning, and I've accumulated so much information. What's kind of scary as well is I could write a second book right now with all the information I've garnered post, you know, publishing.
Wow.
People have now just sent me so much more information. And it makes me very sad because what's happened in South Africa with the sporting system, first of all, you have little to no culture of investigative sports journalism.
No.
A lot of the big media houses are conflicted. They're involved with the sporting federations. A lot of the sporting federations, sporting journalists, obviously don't want to bite the hand that feeds them.
No.
A lot of them are fans before they're journalists. They're friendly with the presidents of the different sporting federations. They get free trips. They get free dinners. Why would you ruin that? But that's not your ethics and integrity as a journalist. But I understand that. A lot of people have got families that don't want to put them in jeopardy. If I was married with kids, I wouldn't have gone on this path because that's where they go after the targets as well. So I don't want to put anyone else in harm's way. But even a year after I started the investigative journalism, about seven years ago, and then after a year, the Olympic Committee of South Africa sued me for defamation for $21 million, my personal capacity. And at the time, I was writing columns for News 24 and for the Citizen newspaper. They didn't sue the media houses. All they wanted to do was bully and silence Graeme Joffe because it didn't get too much. And a $21 million defamation lawsuit sent everybody running. And it was basically a message to any other journalist as well. If you're going to dig, this is what's going to happen to you. Made me more aggressive. I went after more, you know, more and more developed from there. And the money is the root of all the evil. And
of course it is.
That is that so many, the majority of sporting administrators in South Africa are prioritizing self-enrichment ahead of performance. And they're lining their own back pockets. Money from the lottery, where it all stems from, millions and millions from the National Lottery is going to sporting federations, the Olympic Committee, Department of Sport and Recreation through dirty conduit. And the money's being used, abused, totally abused. So, unfortunately, an athlete, if you're not a top outstanding athlete,
yes,
your family has to be pretty wealthy to be able to help you get to the next level. You're paying $30,000 to go on swimming, $30,000 to go on a water polo trip.
Yeah.
The volleyball interprovincial has just been cancelled because there's no money. These administrators have abused their position so badly, and they've all been sitting there for so many years. it's the best job in South Africa, because you're not exposed, you're not going to be caught, and it's the system from the top down. They've all got so much to do with each other. When there's friction, and it's all about themselves, prioritizing themselves, and the poor athletes are the ones that have no voice, that are silenced by draconian codes of conduct.
We know that the things that you've uncovered through your journalism, but specifically now through your book, has been upsetting a lot of people. And we want to know who are these leaders, these corrupt officials, and why are they so untouchable?
I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen in every sector in South Africa, I don't think there is a sector that's probably not corrupt. And under Fikile Mbalula, when he was sports minister, that's when South African sport became its most corrupt. It's unbelievable what he has got away with to date. And we know there's no consequences. There's no accountability. How many, he took that money, those trips that were paid by fuckers, who are the clothing manufacturers that have now got road contracts, they've got building classrooms, building toilets, they're involved in the Free State, they're involved in Vereeniging. So all these links, so it starts at the very top. And when number one is so corrupt, then everybody below them believes they're entitled to be corrupt as well.
A fish rots from the head, doesn't it?
Exactly. So your sports ministry is corrupt. The Department of Sport and Recreation is corrupt. SASCOC is corrupt. Your Olympic Committee. And that allows the sporting federations that vote for the people that sit on the SASCOC board, that allows them to be corrupt. They could never answer my questions. Everyone saw taking the Fifth Amendment. They kept silent. Even now, when I still send emails and questions to some of the people at SASCOC, they can't even account for the lottery money. It's kind of scary, because it's sad for the athletes, because there's one thing that unites South Africans, and that's sport. And when sport goes down the drain, how is South Africa ever going to recover and get back on its feet? It brings us all together. It's a passion. It's a dream for so many kids. And so many youngsters are giving up on the dream. Firstly, maybe their parents can't afford it, and then you've got all these different selection quotas, and you've got so much going on within the sports system that it doesn't matter how good you are, there's a good chance that you're not going to make it because of all these different angles.
We lose some of our better athletes because of things like quota systems, which I think is another can of worms that we don't want to open now. But also, the guys get paid in foreign currency playing for different teams. And I'm not talking about men in general. I'm talking about athletes in general are being paid more money and being drawn away from South Africans, being wearing the Protea and the Springbok logo on their shirts because of money. Does this, which you've been uncovering in your book, does that have an effect on where the players are drawn to as well, and why it's so easy for players to disappear from South African shores?
Exactly. And let me just say, for what South Africa, South Africa has an incredible wealth of talent. And for what South Africa has in talent, finance, facilities, and resources, we should be getting 30 medals at the Olympic Games. What happens, we get 7 or 8, and they come back, and there's a parade through the streets, the sports ministry gets more money out to their friends.
Yeah.
The sports awards every year. I mean, the South African Sports Awards, I'm diverting for a second, but every year we have the South African Sports Awards that cost between 50 and 80 million. Are you kidding me? The highest reward you can get in sport is the Olympics. That's where the athletes want to compete. And sports awards, and then suddenly there's no money for the athletes. And you score 18 million on a party and a dinner every year, and there's all these different awards. But coming back to your question, is you can't really blame the athletes that are seeking greener pastures, that are seeking maybe more money. They've got their livelihoods. The careers are pretty short in sport.
Yes.
Whether it be a regular career, whether it be whatever kind of career, yes, the allure of the dollar is going to get to a lot of different people. But in the same breath, if the athletes were really well looked after and the money was spread, if you spread the wealth around the different federations and about the different sports, there is so much money available for South African sport. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of millions that's being abused. Mm. And are there 300? I think there's something like 300 South African rugby players playing abroad. Unfortunately, the system doesn't allow you. Those 300 players may not have an opportunity to play here. And then, as you said, bringing in the quota system where you're restricted, where there's got to be 5 players of color or only 3 white players in a team. And you know what? You know what a quota system is, Nielsen said it. The quota system is a lack of transformation, and it starts at grassroots level. You have lazy, lazy administrators sitting back on their chairs, getting money by default purposes through corruption, and they're not prepared to go out there and develop sports. And when you start at a grassroots development, you build these kids all the way up. But you've got these multi-purpose facilities that are dropped off in different townships. There's no structure for the coaching. There's no structure for the kids. And these facilities are all lying bare. So at the end of the day, it's about lazy administration. And that's what a quota system in effect is. I mean, what are we, 25 years into democracy? Nothing's changed from the sporting structures. These guys are lazy, lazy, lazy administrators. And it actually makes me irate, because there's so many kids that would love the dream. Going to Dixlert, going to Soweto, develop these kids. There is raw talent there, but you've got to make sure there's a game plan.
I think the question everyone has on their minds when they hear these stories, they want to know, was our performance at the Cricket World Cup linked to what you are unveiling now?
You know, I wrote a little piece about the cricket that I posted. Unfortunately, I don't have my own real platform, right, apart from Facebook and Twitter. And yes, I there's no question. You had a lot of old players that were at the Cricket World Cup. You had problems with the selection. They took a lot of injured players as well. And it just didn't seem like there was team unity as well. Mm. And that's, again, boils down to the structures. If you look on Cricket South Africa and you look at the page where it shows out who the administrators are, who are the suits? I call them the suits.
Yeah.
If you look at the boys' clubs, that's where a lot of the issue is. You have these boys' clubs that get involved in sport administration and they run it like their own business instead of running it for the athletes or running it for the country. And cricket, we have very few names that I recognize on that Cricket South Africa website as administrators, coaches, that have actually really been involved in the game. There's so many former pros that would love to give back and love to be coaching. And when you've got all these different administrators that the players don't respect, that the players don't even know who some of these guys are, a lot of it's also nepotism. It's friends, coaching positions. It's family and friends of the doctors, the physios, the psychologists. You need the best people for the job, and very often the best people for the job are not getting the job in South African sport because of corruption, maladministration, and nepotism.
I mean, we're talking quite generally now. Are you naming names in the book?
Plenty of names. I mean, there's no. That's the thing. You know, you got to put it down. It's no use me just being more generic. Yes, I'm being very generic now. Maybe more with the interview, but you know, from the top down, from Fikile Mbalula to Alec Moemi, the head of sport and recreation, to the head of the different sporting federations, Gideon Sam, Tubby Reddy, who's already now been fired as the SASCOC CEO. And I just wish there was a culture of investigative sports journalism. I fed information to so many of the big media houses, including Carte Blanche, for 5, 6, 7 years. Everything pretty much that I've fed with them has actually come true. And the lottery is where there needs to be a full forensic audit and investigation. The guys that sit on those lottery distribution agencies are giving their friends false applications. They're making millions and millions for themselves. I'll give you a great example. The South African Soccer Museum, which doesn't exist, has got over 10 million from the lottery over the last couple of years.
What are you trying to achieve? What is the end game here?
You know, number one, I want a fairer and equal opportunity and fair play for South Africa sportsmen and women. They deserve a fair chance. They're not getting a fair chance. They're silenced by draconian codes of conduct. That is a priority. I would love the system to change. Look, I don't know if anything is going to change, but I had to put it out there.
Yeah.
It also was the cheapest therapy for me. I went through a very dark and lonely 7 years. I needed to get it off my chest and put it all out there instead of sitting on, you know, obviously a lot of the information I put out there, but there was a lot, there was a good 60-70% that I had held on to that I needed to get out there at a later stage. So I didn't have a platform. After a few years, I was on my own. And vindication's fine. I've already been vindicated. I've already seen what's happened to South African sport. I've seen what's happened to a lot of the administrators that have finally been exposed by the SASCOC Commission of Inquiry and other things that have come about. The lottery needs to be cleaned up completely. I would love to see a cleaner system in South African sport, real sports people getting involved, and not these boys' clubs that are just stealing blind and making a living for themselves, driving fancy cars, living in big houses, while the athletes' dreams are being shattered by these corrupt administrators. So once again, just a priority for a clearer path, a cleaner path, and fair play and equal opportunity for all South Africa sportsmen and women.
You say that you've been through dark times, Graham. In those times, has there been times when you felt like giving up, and how do you keep going?
And it's so true. There were so many times that I thought, Graham, what are you doing? You're going up against a brick wall. You're taking on a mafia.
Yeah.
How with a pen are you going to beat a mafia? But I every time I thought, let me give up, I said, how can you do that? How can you start and how can you not finish? You've got to finish what you started. And even today, I still poke the bear on Twitter. I still put some stuff out on Facebook because I'm getting stuff every day from people and I'm going, wow, these people have confided in me. They've trusted me all along. They need a voice. And still, they don't have that voice if I don't actually put it out there. There are a few more sports journalists that are trying to take it on now, not to the extent that I did, but there needs to be a culture of investigative sports journalism. These people need to be exposed. There needs to be justice. And yes, the dark and lonely road is not a pleasant place. But again, absolutely no regrets. As a journalist, that's what I wanted to do. And I feel, I feel like I've got my ethics and integrity. And
yes,
the consequences were tough, but at the end of the day, you've got one life, you've got one chance to make a difference. And I'm hoping that this will make a difference in a lot of athletes' lives at the end of the day.
What can we as ordinary South Africans, not necessarily involved in the media, what can we do? We want to do something about this as well. We've read your book, Sport, Greed and Betrayal, Wanted for Crimes Against Journalism. What can I do?
As individuals, it's very tough. I agree. A lot of people are scared. We need more whistleblowers. You need people to speak. You need people to stand up. As an individual, it's very difficult. I wouldn't want anyone to go through what I went through. I feel good now. You've come out of at the other side. But there needs to be a groundswell. It needs to be done with groups. Yes, on Twitter there's a groundswell.
Yes.
When it comes to corruption. People are fed up with corruption. It's ruining the country. It's ruining the harmony. It feels like there's no unity. And that's what happens with corruption. But corruption also has no color, has no race. When money's involved, everybody's friends. And they all cover up for each other. The corrupt are also very well protected at the very top. I don't know if you guys saw, but there was a story I put out on Twitter the other day about $90 million given to a skateboarding event in Kimberley. $90 million paid to an event company for skateboarding events.
It's ridiculous.
That's what it's become. It's become laughable. It's become ridiculous. And yes, as I say, the more whistle when people speak up and stand up for the truth, it gives other people more courage. I'm not going to lie, as an individual, it's not easy, but the more people that start standing up and the more whistleblowers that come to effect, the more chance that there is for change in the country.
We're getting too used to these things being said. So we hear about millions and billions, and all of a sudden this becomes a relative term, and we hear it quite often. We hear about a lot of money, and all of a sudden it doesn't become a shock anymore.
Difficult in the sense because corruption has just become a norm.
Yeah.
Corruption, you hear about it every day in South Africa. Every sector has got its problems. You just hope that the bigger media houses, I just wish Carte Blanche would have listened to me 6-7 years ago. The problem is they also conflicted. Carte Blanche is the same group, it's Nice Pass owned, it's the same as Supersport.
Yep.
So Supersport are totally conflicted as well. And you need these bigger media houses, the Prime Medias, the Nice Passes.
Yes.
Actually, they are very conflicted, and that's in my book. And we see SANEF now, the South African National Editors Forum, who have a real problem. I went to them for help when I was being threatened. They didn't even bother to help me. They weren't interested. They're very conflicted as well. They've got Prime Media, they've got NASPAS, they've got Tito Blackstar representatives, and now they're putting out a tweet about, send us information about journalism being captured in South Africa and ethics. So they're going to mark their own exam papers?
Yeah, get
an independent inquiry, and all they need to do is read my book to see how South African sports journalism is captured.
That's the book to go out, grab it, read it. Sport, Greed and Betrayal, Wanted for Crimes Against Journalism, Graham Joffe. Graham, how can we follow you to keep track of what you are doing?
Twitter would probably be the best. That's where I still get the chance to poke the bear. That'll be at Joffers, my boy, JOFFERSMYBOW. I'm also on Facebook, but Twitter would probably be the easiest way. And then we got to spread the message. Let's spread the gospel about. Let's expose these corrupt people. And as I said to you, you know, it needs to be more and more people standing up for the truth and speaking up. And as I say, I really appreciate your time and the interview with you guys, Nielsen, Finette, and to all your listeners, and really hoping for a better South Africa and change, and it needs to happen soon.
Ons het jou smaak. Ons het jou faith. FM.